Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ruben Stern, in for Ryan Fumulener. Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act. The 5-4 decision effectively means that federal benefits afforded to married couples will also apply to same-sex couples married in the states that allow it. You may recall, in 2004, Missouri voters approved a state constitutional amendment that only recognizes marriage as, quote, between a man and a woman. That restriction still stands. But meanwhile, just across the state line in Iowa, same-sex marriage is allowed, as it is in 12 other states and in the District of Columbia. So how does the Supreme Court ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act affect places like Missouri? What might change for same-sex couples in our state? And will the ruling have any effect on businesses, taxing authorities, and the like? Today on Intersection, we'll work through what is and is not changing with regard to marriage benefits in Missouri. We'll also look a bit more into the legal context that led to the Supreme Court's ruling. Joining me in the studio first, Justin Dyer is an assistant professor in the University of Missouri Department of Political Science. His research areas include American political development, political philosophy, and constitutional law. Welcome to our program, Justin Dyer.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us today. Also with us at the table, Michelle Cecil is a professor in the MU School of Law, where she teaches bankruptcy and tax law. Welcome to our program, Michelle Cecil.
Thank you so much.
Glad to have you with us as well.
I'm really glad to be here.
We also have with us by Skype, AJ Bockelman. He is the executive director of PROMO. His group advocates for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality in the state of Missouri. Welcome to our program, AJ Bockelman.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us for the conversation from St. Louis. We hope that you and our audience will participate in the conversation as well. What do you think might change as a result of the Supreme Court's decision? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And let's start with this question. Michelle, maybe you can help us out. What exactly did the Supreme Court ruling do?
What it did was it repealed one section of the Defense of Marriage Act, and that was Article 3. Article 3 said that for federal purposes, marriage is between a man and a woman. And the Supreme Court overruled that, declared it unconstitutional, in fact, as a violation of due process under the Fifth Amendment. And so as a result of that ruling, in states that allow same-sex marriage, the couple is entitled to all of the benefits for under federal law that heterosexual couples are entitled to.
And so how does that affect things moving forward?
Okay, so let's start with something as simple as filing a joint tax return. Same-sex couples until June 26th were not entitled to file a joint tax return because for federal tax purposes, they weren't married. Now they are considered married for federal income tax purposes, and they can file a joint tax return. Now, whether that is a positive for same-sex couples or a negative depends on the tax bracket they're in, how much each of the wage earners earns. There's something called the marriage tax penalty that people talk about, and it's not actually a penalty, but essentially, if a married couple makes fairly close to the same amount, they each make, you know, $60,000 a year, for tax purposes, by filing jointly, they will pay more in tax than if they were single and filing singly. So you can't say that the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act is going to result in lower revenue to the government. It depends on the couple. Statistics do show that same-sex couples, more of them, more of those couples, a higher percentage, tend to have two working spouses than heterosexual couples. And so that suggests that it might be a detriment for them to file jointly and be treated as a married couple for tax purposes, but it depends on what each spouse makes vis-a-vis the other spouse.
Right. We started off with tax stuff. AJ, I wonder if you could jump in and tell us, what do you consider to be the most important implication of all this? Is the tax thing the biggest thing, or are there other parts of this that are really important?
Well, I think that actually, while taxes are certainly important, and there are those different nuances based upon individual couples, by and large, the entire decision of the Windsor case is very striking and very far-reaching. You're talking about 13 states that will now have full recognition of relationships between the federal government and also within their state. But the pieces that are still coming out from this are what we're still trying to get an understanding of. For example, even couples that would be based here in Missouri. In fact, we just talked to a couple from Columbia just last week, and connected that couple with an immigration attorney, because the immigration status in the state now does impact them. They're able to file for one of the partners who is not a naturalized citizen of the United States to become identified as a married partner because they were married in another state. They just don't have it recognized here in the state of Missouri. But through the Department of Homeland Security, they issued guidelines showing that binational couples can now have benefits even if they live in a state like Missouri. And we're going to see more things like that. So while the case, as Michelle was talking about on tax law, while initially it's only going to impact those 13 states, it is expected that something will likely be changed administratively with the IRS, as is with Social Security, to potentially recognize couples living in a state like Missouri.
Right. That seems to be the thorniest part of this, right? That question of state people got married in versus state that they're going to reside in, right? How is that getting addressed at this point? Is it just floating out there yet to be determined, or is there any movement in terms of sorting some of that stuff out?
There are two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, that have fairly broad co-sponsorship, and that those bills would treat couples as being married based on the place that they got married. So if you were married in New York, which recognizes same-sex marriage, and you moved to Missouri, which does not recognize same-sex marriage, you would be treated as married in Missouri. The wide thinking is that that will pass in the Senate and won't pass in the House.
And this,
so just to explain a bit further on that particular piece, that what you're referencing, Michelle, is the Respective Marriage Act, and that does take on the aspects of DOMA. But inherently, part of the challenge for this, and this is really thorny, and we are waiting for more guidance on this from the federal agencies. What specifically, Ruben, you're talking about is place of domicile versus place of celebration.
Right.
And historically, the IRS guidelines or Social Security Administration guidelines reference place of domicile. And it is thought that those agencies will issue guidelines. In fact, we've already seen the Social Security Administration put out a statement just last week stating that couples should still file a claim regardless of where they live to have it evaluated. Again, this applies only if they're legally married in one of the 13 entities currently, technically 10 entities, because Rhode Island, Minnesota, and Delaware have not yet issued marriage licenses. So if they're married legally in one of those other states, then they could still have a Social Security claim under a death benefit or a disability benefit under Social Security Administration. At the heart of it, though, is still a real challenge with the fact that many other issues related to marriage deal with state law. So the issue of probate court, which decides of where your earned assets go when you pass, is still going to be a matter of state law. And so couples still married in the state of Missouri would still need to go through the estate planning process that tries to protect their assets.
Right. Let me remind our audience quickly, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the effects of the recent Supreme Court ruling that struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act. Joining me in the studio are Justin Dyer, an assistant professor in the University of Missouri Department of Political Science, Michelle Cecil, a professor in the MU School of Law, and A.J. Bockelman, executive director of the organization PROMO. For those of you in our audience, what was your reaction when the Supreme Court decision was announced? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also email us at intersection@kbia.org, or you can tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2. To watch the video and join our online chat, just go to kbia.org, scroll down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2, online at kbia.org. Justin, I want to get your thoughts at this point in terms of how this stuff is rolling out.
Well, AJ just mentioned the Defense of Marriage Act, and this really speaks to one of the unresolved issues with the Windsor case. And that was it struck down one section of the Defense of Marriage Act. It said for federal law, for federal purposes, the federal government would defer to state definitions of marriage. And so if you're married in the state of New York, you're legally married there, you can file, say, federal taxes as a married couple. The question is whether or not other states would have to recognize that marriage. And currently, Section 2 of the Defense of Marriage Act says no. It says that no state will be required to give credit to the recordings of a same-sex marriage in another state. So the question, I think, going forward is whether or not the principles, the rationale in the Windsor case can really prevent the flood of legal challenges that we're going to see from courts now saying the logic of this case seems to be that Missouri is going to have to recognize same-sex marriage as well. And when you read the dissents, I think a really interesting point of difference between Roberts and Scalia in this case were their predictions for what's going to happen. And Roberts said, no, there's nothing about this case that requires, say, the state of Missouri or another state that chooses not to recognize same-sex marriage to do so. Whereas Scalia kind of just hits the warning bells and says there's, you know, every state law is now going to be declared unconstitutional that has a traditional definition of marriage. And so going forward, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the courts sort this out.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. Scalia's dissent basically takes passages of this ruling and says you could easily substitute this state law instead of the DOMA part in there and sort of plays it out like, hey, if another case gets up here, this is exactly what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that just a week after Windsor was handed down, a Nevada case went before the Supreme Court on cert on this very issue, and the Supreme Court declined to take cert. So it's not quite ready to decide the issue yet.
Right. And one of the dissents said the Supreme Court shouldn't have even taken this case, right?
Well, you had in both cases issues of standing and whether or not the parties to the suit had standing to bring the case. And so when I mentioned both cases, you had the case on Proposition 8 as well.
The one in California.
And the one in California and the one also Windsor versus U.S. And in each case, you had really technical questions of legal standing. But the court splits on that, 5-4 in each case, about whether or not they should even have taken the case, whether or not they had standing. And I think involved in this case was whether or not there was a sufficient controversy because the executive branch agreed with Windsor in this case that that she had a rightful claim and no one was appealing the Fifth Circuit decision. And so that was Michelle might be able to speak more to the legal issues surrounding that, but you had that question.
It was very – and the most interesting thing is that they were completely different justices that were in the majority in the two cases. One is Hollingsworth versus Perry, and that was the Proposition 8 case. And the Supreme Court said that the people who brought the lawsuit had no standing because they were not harmed by the California declaring same-sex marriage to be constitutional. And then a completely different majority, again, as Justin said, kind of dancing around the jurisdictional issue, deciding that they had jurisdiction, and then going forth on the merits.
Well, let me ask about this federal versus state thing. I mean, take a very specific example. The Missouri state income tax form, you start off with a number off of your federal tax return. So if a couple that's legally married by federal standards is filing jointly, what do they put in that box when they have to file the Missouri forms?
That is, in my opinion, the biggest tax issue. There are many other issues, as AJ explained, but the biggest tax issue is that Missouri bases its definition of income, its allowance of deductions, off of the federal return. And for federal income tax purposes, a couple that's legally married in Rhode Island is entitled to file a joint return, to one spouse can take the other spouse's child as a dependent, and then that carries over, they're living in Missouri, then in Missouri, we don't recognize same-sex marriage. Do they have to redo their federal return for Missouri purposes? So there is an inherent conflict in Missouri's laws, because Missouri, well, the Constitution says a marriage is between a man and a woman, and then the tax law says use the federal income tax definition of income. And those are inherently in conflict, as you just suggested.
Right. We also talked about things like probate that are dealt with at the state level. AJ, how do you see that getting resolved?
Well, ultimately, it's going to take marriage being recognized here in the state of Missouri. But to slightly piggyback off of something Michelle indicated, I do think that it's important to pay attention to this tax structure going forward, mainly because what we're seeing, even in the absence of DOMA and the Windsor decision, corporate entities have kind of led the fight on LGBT inclusion in the workplace. And in particular, there's one item that many people are not as aware of is the idea of grossing up or the cost of benefits if you're a same-sex couple and a company offers domestic partner benefits. So, for example, I know in Colombia you have IBM. They have wonderful benefits for their same-sex couples. If one individual at, say, IBM has domestic partner benefits, the cost of carrying their partner on insurance is treated as income, so it's taxed. And what we're now seeing emerge is a broader discussion about the disparities and the impact on large corporations in trying to look at recruitment, retention, and trying to even manage employees over a broad network throughout the United States. So I think what we're starting to see is a little bit of the corporate voice take a lead in talking about equality when it comes to having uniform code when it comes to marriage. Ultimately, what it means is for us still back in the state, we still have to, and our organization is still evaluating what is the most ideal way. Nothing is a clear-cut path for us, but clearly repeal of the marriage amendment, which would either be through the legislative action or ballot initiative process, or a judicial case. None of those are all that necessarily clear right now. Certainly our circuit court for this region, district court is not going to be friendly to the LGBT community, at least it's not believed to be. And we also don't know that filing court cases would be the wisest thing, given that, as Michelle indicated, you have a Nevada case and also Hawaii that will now go before the Ninth Circuit, which ultimately gave us the Prop 8 decision as well, and effectively could possibly render Section 2 of DOMA moot.
So legally it could get rendered moot. Is there a legislative track that might change things in terms of what the states would be required to do with regard to marriages that were performed in other states?
Federally, that is what Michelle was recognizing earlier with right. The Repeal of Marriage Act. But as she also indicated, it's likely to pass the Senate, but not likely to get very much traction in the House.
Let me ask you this. Even if it did make it through the legislature, and maybe our guests at the table can help with this, part of the ruling basically said, hey, the federal government is not in the business of deciding who gets to get married and who doesn't. That's up to the states, right? That was part of the rationale that the Supreme Court used in striking down that one section of DOMA. If another law were to come back that said, okay, all the states have to recognize legal marriages and give them provisions, isn't that sort of the other side of the same coin, the federal government trying to dictate what counts as a marriage and what doesn't?
I think part of it gets into the Supreme Court's jurisprudence in 14th Amendment due process cases and equal protection cases. And so the question will be, why does the federal government need to defer to the state of New York on this issue? And when you read Kennedy's opinion, he starts out by making a very strong, robust federalism issue. States have traditionally defined marriage. The state of New York has defined these as marriages. The federal government, therefore, should defer to the state. But in doing that, he really based that decision on the idea that the federal government had no rational basis at all for its its determination that marriage is the union between a man and a woman. And so in other words, what he's saying is that the federal government was motivated by a bare desire to harm or by an irrational animus. And if that's the case, if traditional definitions of marriage are motivated only by this bare desire to harm or some irrational animus, then it's hard to see how those state distinctions can remain on the books under the court's 14th Amendment law and its precedents. If that's what we're talking about, then it looks like the state definitions are equally motivated by a bare desire to harm. And so that's the question going forward. How far is Kennedy and the rest of the court willing to take that principle?
Interesting. Let me remind our audience once again, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the effects of the recent Supreme Court ruling that struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act. Joining me in the studio are Justin Dyer, an assistant professor in the University of Missouri Department of Political Science, Michelle Cecil, a professor in the MU School of Law, and A.J. Baucom, an executive director of the organization PROMO. For those of you in our audience, what do you think about the rationale here? If the federal government is out of the business of deciding who can get married, do you think that that then implies that the states should be able to do it and the federal government is on the hook to follow those definitions? Complicated question, but that's what's at the heart of this ruling. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that issue. Give us a call. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also email us, intersection@kbia.org, or you can find us on Twitter at intersectkbia. I want to bring in a comment from the chat room here. It's a question from Jennifer. She asks, do the cases in other states like Arkansas or Pennsylvania stand a stronger chance of gaining marriage equality than a case in Missouri might? And AJ, you might be the best position to answer that question.
Well, I think there was actually additional movement this morning in the Arkansas case. I think there's something that there's a new turn of events, and I'm not sure that case is necessarily moving forward, although I may be wrong. Certainly one of the things to watch for will be how a current case going through the system is treated. There is the case of the Missouri State Trooper's partner who was killed in the line of duty. His attempt to get benefits through the the Master's pension system for troopers. And they should be rendering a decision relatively soon in regards to that. But certainly that doesn't necessarily take on overall marriage, but it could give us an insight into what does it look like for a court here in the state of Missouri to take up an issue relative to the LGBT community, because we have very few cases that have ever gone through the court system here.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. If say that a couple that was married in another state, I mean, Iowa's just across the state line. There are other states that, you know, it's easy to get to by plane, right? So a couple gets married in one of these other states. They come back to Missouri. One of these issues comes up in terms of, you know, a tax thing or something else. Could the state of Missouri say, hey, wait a minute, this definition of marriage is getting imposed on us. We're going to sue in order to reverse this because in Missouri, marriage is a man and a woman. Is that a possible legal track that a state like Missouri could actually try to move this up to prevent having to change things based on this federal ruling?
So the state of Missouri take action?
Yeah, for example, or another state saying, hey, in our state,
based upon the definition.
Yeah, in California, they declined to do that, right? The state Correct. Government in California said, we're not going to defend this thing. We don't want to go there. And then the private party came in to try to defend I think it was a constitutional amendment in California, right?
Mm-hmm. Voter approved. And that's where they lack standing.
Right, exactly. So could the state of Missouri, if they actually wanted to pick up the legal challenge, take this to court and say, we don't believe that same-sex marriages belong in our state and we're not going to do anything to facilitate those?
I actually would probably defer to maybe Michelle or Justin, since they are the legal minds at the table. I don't necessarily know how that would play out.
Right.
It's an interesting question. I don't know what that case would look like in terms of the state's claim. So the state of Missouri has already amended its constitution, and I think if there were a challenge to the state constitution similar to what you had in California, the attorney general in Missouri would likely defend that law in court. I don't think they would back away from defending it. Mm-hmm. And that was what you had in California, where you had a constitutional amendment passed by voters through Prop 8, and the state says, well, look, we're not going to defend this any longer. And it was in a federal court that they declined to defend it. I don't think you'd see that situation in Missouri.
So it's more likely the other direction, that somebody would be suing the state for not accommodating their marriage that was performed
Correct.
In another
yeah,
state.
I think that's where you're going to see a real legal challenge.
Right. Okay. In terms of some of the other stuff, we've talked about taxes, we've talked about probate. What are some of the other issues? You know, we keep hearing this figure, 1,000 different federal benefits applied mm-hmm. to married couples. What are some of the other things? Michelle, help us out with that.
Okay, so Social Security is one. Most people know that if you're married, you're entitled to the greater of your Social Security benefits or half of your spouse's Social Security benefits. So that came into being when most women were stay-at-home wives. The husband earned the salary. The wife was entitled to half of the husband's Social Security so that she had something to live on as well, recognizing her role in supporting the family. So one benefit that same-sex couples are going to gain from the Windsor case is that in states where they recognize same-sex marriage, they're going to be entitled to the greater of the Social Security that they would have earned or half of their spouse's Social Security. I have seen figures that that is not going to cost the government significantly because many same-sex couples earn relatively equal amounts. AJ can maybe talk about the statistics better than I can on that. But Social Security is one. Another one is HIPAA, which is the law that says that you can't give out medical information unless the person has agreed to have it released. Spouses have a right to have a release of medical information, so that's a right that same-sex spouses have gained.
Right. I want to come back to more of that. First, we got a caller on the line that I'd like to get in here before the break, if we could. Brian from Fulton, are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay, Brian, thanks for joining the program today and for calling in.
Sure.
Okay, so you have a comment or experience to share?
I was just saying that my life partner and I have been together for 9 years, and we never went to another state to try to get married because we felt like, well, I just didn't feel like I could fight the state of Missouri every time I filled out a form or went to the doctor, et cetera. But when the Supreme Court handed down this ruling, we're thrilled, and we're flying out to Seattle to get married next week.
Well, let me ask you this. What changed in terms of your expectation of what can happen? So you said you didn't want to do battle with the state of Missouri. State of Missouri law has not necessarily changed. So why are you guys getting on a plane now?
Well, basically, we feel like we're just going to have to get out of the state of Missouri if things don't change. And we were looking at Washington State as a potential landing spot, and we figure we might as well get married there. And certainly if there's some kind of a class action suit or anything, I'll be at the front of the line to, you know, fight for our relationship. And basically for me, it's not about the money. It's just a human dignity sort of thing.
Right. But your plan is to stay here in Missouri?
5-year plan is to leave the state of Missouri primarily because of the way the laws are.
Right, right. AJ, I want to ask you about this. Is this a pretty common sentiment for what you guys are seeing?
We are seeing a lot of that. I know we don't typically deal in judicial action, but the ACLU, both the KC and the St. Louis offices, I know have gotten a number of phone calls from couples wanting to take up lawsuits. Certainly, there's an evaluation period for all of this to try to understand what's going to be the most feasible. But certainly, that is another factor that we have a lot of couples. In fact, given that Illinois will potentially likely pass marriage within the next 6 months, I've had a statement made by a number of couples here in the St. Louis region that have said, you know, I could still work for my company and live over in O'Fallon, Illinois, or, you know, just right across the bridge. So that is a very common sentiment, and I do think that, again, companies are probably going to be stepping up and noting this and see a loss of staff recruitment and retention,
right?
And then that's going to impact the case.
Okay, I've got to cut us to a break here. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. We're talking about the effects of the Supreme Court ruling that struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act. Joining me in the studio are Justin Dyer and Michelle Cecil, who are both professors at MU, and A.J. Buckelman from the organization Promo. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ruben Stern, filling in for Ryan Femuliner. Today, we're talking about federal benefits being extended to married gay couples as a result of a recent Supreme Court ruling that struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act. Joining me in the studio are Justin Dyer, an assistant professor in the University of Missouri Department of Political Science, Michelle Cecil, a professor in the MU School of Law, and on the phone and via video, we have A.J. Bachelman, executive director of the organization PROMO. For those of you in our audience, how do you think this issue might play out in the years ahead? We'd love to hear your projections and your ideas, so give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also email us at intersection@kbia.org, or you can find us on Twitter at intersectkbia. We were on the phone before the break with Brian from Fulton, who was sharing his own experience. Brian, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Brian, we were talking here in the studio a little bit about where in that line you might be if legislation moves forward. So are you likely to be somebody who would try to get things changed in Missouri, or are you just going to join the queue once it's going?
Either or. You know, when Tom and I met, it was in 2004 when the whole Defense of Marriage thing was going on. So we had both been married to women previously and were divorced. So It's always sort of felt very personal to us, you know, the DOMA law and everything in Missouri. So I mentioned that it's really not about money for me, but more of a human dignity thing. For instance, every time I go to my doctor, they will not, I'm either single or divorced. They don't have a place on the form for life partner, and I can't put married. And so every time I go to the doctor, it's an ordeal. And most recently, a couple weeks ago, the gal at the front desk, you know, yelled out in front of a full lobby of people, life partner is not an option. I can't put that on the form. And it's just kind of embarrassing, you know. And I feel like my doctor should at least know that I'm not single, you know, that I do have a life partner. So it's that kind of thing.
Right, right. Interesting. I just wonder in terms of as this continues to roll out, is it likely that more states are going to be changing what goes on in the states so that, you know, it's not – right now, the gay marriage seems to be concentrated in a few states on the east and west coast for the most part, with Iowa the exception kind of in the middle. How likely is it that this is going to be a legislative change that happens out individually by state as opposed to some big national thing?
I think it's an open question right now how this goes forward. At the state level, certainly see momentum in different places. But I think it's still a long time off before a state of Missouri or a state similar to Missouri enacts legislation that would recognize same-sex marriage. So the question, I think, is whether or not the federal courts will step in, whether or not the Supreme Court will take a case, and ultimately whether or not the Supreme Court will require those states to recognize same-sex marriage. If they don't do that, if Kennedy is really limited by the federalism argument that he made, that the federal government should recognize the state's right to define marriage as it sees fit, then I think it'll be probably a generational battle that you'll see for at least, you know, 10, 15, 20 years moving forward state by state. And right now, I think there are 13 states that recognize same-sex marriage. And so still the overwhelming majority of states in the United States recognize marriage only as a union of a man and a woman. And to see those 37 states individually, one by one, legislatively enact laws to recognize same-sex marriage, I think will take quite some time.
Go ahead.
Well, I would actually kind of push back slightly on what Justin was saying. I firmly believe that in a 3 to 5 year window, this becomes a moot point, that we have marriage equality throughout the United States. And to be clear first, that it is marriage. It's not gay marriage, not same-sex marriage. It's marriage because it's the same thing that heterosexual couples seek. It's the same protections. It's the exact same thing. What we're seeing, though, Illinois, Oregon, New Jersey, all those three states are moving forward quickly. Nevada has a strong effort afoot. Potentially New Mexico may have a significant court case that because currently in New Mexico, the state does not necessarily use gender pronouns, either husband or wife, in their documents. And so there's a case moving forward that could quickly result in marriage in New Mexico. And there's not a lot of will pushing back against that currently. Colorado is another state currently with civil unions that's on a march towards marriage. Those states likely are going to be decided within the next 2 years, if not even before. And so the momentum is clearly on our side. And while we're reluctant necessarily to constantly call back the other civil rights movements, but if you look back at the 1960s, whenever Loving v. Virginia was decided, you only had 16 states that still had laws against interracial marriage on the books. And that was a significant case put forward by the Supreme Court. So I think whether it's through legislative action that happens at the federal level, through the U.S. Supreme Court, or individual state actions, it's going to be a collaborative process through all three of those efforts that I think within a five-year window likely end up with relationship recognition. Now, what I would say is the challenge to that yet is that in a state like Missouri, one of the major factors my organization still deals with is the fact that even if you are a couple that's gone to another state and get married and you have access to those limited federal benefits as they're currently being extended, if you're out in the workplace, you could still be fired from your job because the Missouri Human Rights Statute does not protect people based on sexual orientation or gender identity currently. So that is a major factor that we still have as reality for people here in the state, and we still try to focus on changing.
Okay, AJ, I just want to give you this comment from our chat room. Somebody says, AJ is correct. In 3 to 5 years, Missouri will, I hope, finally get with the program. Iowa's getting all the revenue for marriages now. They got mine. So that was a comment from our chat room. Brian, I wonder if you had anything else that you wanted to add to our conversation while we have you on the phone.
Well, just one thing about health insurance. When I basically came out at age 40 in 2004, I was kicked out of my own business because of my sexual orientation. And in the sort of ensuing financial upheaval, I haven't had insurance since 2004. And my life partner's company has told him repeatedly, if the state of Missouri doesn't recognize, we don't recognize. So I've had at least one really scary incident where I was in anaphylactic shock. And because I couldn't afford an ER trip, we sat in the parking lot, and I drank Benadryl, you know, until my throat, I felt like I wasn't going to, you know, stop breathing. But that's kind of a really real-life illustration of what the DOMA law did, and that's why certainly I feel it's very personal, and I feel like the people that passed it were definitely passing judgment and punishing me. So, yeah, I'll be really happy when it goes away. And I think what the Supreme Court did, it just gave me hope, you know, that there was hope out there for fairness towards people like me, couples like us.
Right. Brian, I want to thank you very much for joining our program, sharing your story today.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Response from our panelists in terms of the way that what you heard from our caller from
I applaud Brian for calling in, and I think that he echoes the sentiments of many couples that their marriage is not recognized for in the state of Missouri and in other states. I would, as far as your question about where we're going to be in 3 to 5 years, I believe that I hope that AJ is right, that in 3 to 5 years this becomes moot. I believe that if it is left to the states, that the states that AJ has talked about clearly are moving in that direction, but that only accounts for half the states. And there are still half of the states, Missouri being one of them, where I think Justin is right, it's going to be an uphill battle. What I think we might see at that point in time is the Supreme Court taking on the issue. It has to be decided. And if the states aren't going to do it across the board, the federal government is going to have to, either through legislation or through the Supreme Court. The problem with the Supreme Court taking up the case is Kennedy was in the majority on the Windsor case, and I would be surprised if he would be in the majority, for the reasons Justin enunciated, on repealing Section 2 of DOMA.
Right. There's some good questions coming up in our chat room. Justin, I want to give you a chance to respond first, and then sure, we'll get to some of these. Did you want to respond?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant to the questions.
Yeah,
in the
I wasn't
chat room.
Sure if you. No, oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. So here are the questions in the chat rooms. First of all, we've talked about the changing tide of public opinion, and that, you know, generational battle is looming, because I think the statistic I saw is of the people 18 to 34, about 70% of that age group doesn't see a problem with gay marriage across the country. So as they matriculate through our voter system, it's reasonable to think that the tide might change. The question in the chat room is related to that, and the question is, will conservatives have to readjust their stance on LGBTQ issues to remain in control of the legislation in Missouri? And so I want to throw that out for consideration. Is this issue one where the conservatives of America are going to have to change their tune to stay in control of states like Missouri and many of the others?
I think there are a lot of what-ifs involved in that situation, the hypothetical. But if we presume that public opinion remains static over time and that the younger generation remains overwhelming in support of same-sex marriage, then yes, I think eventually the state of Missouri and legislatures like it, there'll be a turnover and public opinion will influence the way that those legislatures decide these cases and decide how to legislate. And you'll see, I think, individual legislators and parties rethinking their position on this. But again, that presumes that things stay the same. Every once in a while, we have an issue like this that comes up, and public opinion clearly changes over time, that it usually does not remain static. The movement of public opinion in favor of marriage reform, I think, is one example of how quickly public opinion can change on an issue like this. And so it's always a dangerous business to try to predict where public opinion is going to be, you know, 10 or 15 years from now.
You think it's possible that the pendulum will swing back and that people will be back in favor of traditional marriage
I think it's certainly possible. Whether or not that occurs, we don't know. But you do have issues like this that divide people, that are politically volatile. I think abortion is one example of that, that you had a Supreme Court case in the early 1970s, and public opinion at that time, I think, was in favor of the Supreme Court's decision by a 2-to-1 margin. You had even evangelicals and others who were in favor of abortion reform at the time, and you saw a backlash against the Supreme Court's decision and really a robust conservative political movement at that time that was born because of the Supreme Court's decision. So it's an open question whether or not you wouldn't see something like that develop in defense of a traditional conception of marriage in the United States. And I think that's a real possibility.
Right. AJ, I'm curious your thoughts on this.
So actually, just to jump off of what Justin was saying there, and to take on head on the idea of Roe v. Wade and how that would imply here, many people thought that one of the furthest left, so to speak, of the decisions that could have come out with Windsor or Prop 8 would be that they would confer marriages to the entire United States. And by and large, the LGBT rights movement, the national entities working behind the scenes on these sorts of things, none of us were looking at that being the optimum decision. While we would love to see marriage equality be the rule of the land, we also don't want to see a Roe v. Wade type situation that lines up a series of lawsuits over the next 20, 30, 40 years. So in that vein, what we really anticipated was this decision that came out from Windsor, where it only applies to those 13 states, but also gives the federal government latitude to then offer the benefits where possible under federal agencies. What I'm seeing in the legislature, because for the better part of my time as executive director at Promo, I spend the time down in Jefferson City at the Capitol from January through May when the legislature is in session. And I can tell you that over the 7 years now that I've been lobbying in the legislature, there is a sea change. You do have people, conservatives, that get it. Not all of them, clearly. We still have a lot of the far-right evangelical voice that is at the table. But that voice is waning, and where it is exercised in the far-right sort of caustic sense is often marginalized, much like the voice of the LGBT community had been marginalized long before. So, yes, we have that possibility that that marginalized voice could be rallied around and brought back to a central voice, and traditional marriage becomes the rallying point. But I do believe that the younger generation will have some guidance in this. I'd say in the legislature, one of the biggest pieces that has helped an issue like gay rights is the idea of term limits. With the term limits being overturned, and you have a new slate of legislators in there roughly every so many years, every 8 years in each body at least, representing certain seats, you get a younger crop of people in the legislature. And the younger Republicans don't understand why this is a major issue. But certainly we can't always look at the younger generation as to be the guidepost, only because if you look back at what was considered one of the most liberal-leaning times in America, it was the 1960s. And those people are the individuals that are now currently in control.
Right. Interesting. Another related question that came from our chat room as well is, you know, if a case like this were to work its way through Missouri right now, do you think that the Attorney General for Missouri would defend that case and take it up to the Supreme Court like California decided not to?
I might be able to take on that question because the Attorney General, Chris Koster, was one of my students, and so I know him well, and we've talked over the years. And as you probably know, he started out as a Republican, and he switched his party affiliation to the Democratic Party. And he was asked by the legislature to attack Obamacare, and he personally agreed with Obamacare, but he saw it as his job, and we talked about it at length, and he came to the law school to talk about it. So this is he's been very public about it, that that's his job, is to defend our laws. And in fact, he came up with one of the most creative arguments attacking Obamacare, and it was not accepted by the Supreme Court, but it was the major argument, and that's bifurcation of the law. So I believe from past precedent that he would defend the law in Missouri. It's not a law, it's a constitutional amendment, and so it takes even a stronger majority to pass. Despite the fact that that would not probably, and I haven't talked to him about this issue, but probably be his leaning.
Right. Your thoughts,
My
Justin?
Thoughts are similar. I think in the state of Missouri, you would have the Attorney General defend the law, and it would be a politically unpopular decision for him to decide not to, and anything's possible, but I think he's probably committed to defending the state constitution in court if it were challenged.
Right. AJ, do you agree?
At this point, I would tend to agree that likely the Attorney General would consistently uphold the laws of the state, whether we agree with that or not.
Right. We've talked through a lot of the things that would affect couples. What are some of the other issues that we haven't talked through yet? I mean, I've got a list here that I could go through, but I'm curious which ones you think are important to discuss in terms of how couples would be affected differently now that this court decision has come down. Michelle, we'll start with you.
Well, there are we've been talking about some of the benefits that would help same-sex couples, such as Social Security, such as oftentimes filing joint tax returns. There are some that would hurt them. For example, if a spouse in Missouri pays another spouse to watch his or her children, that is income to the other spouse, and the spouse that pays the benefits would be entitled to take advantage of dependent care assistance, health savings accounts, and the like. If they were a married couple, then one spouse is just watching his or her own children, and those benefits would go away. So there are some benefits that are going to be taken away from same-sex couples if their marriage is recognized for federal tax purposes.
Okay. Justin, your thoughts and other issues that we should be talking about here?
I think one of the interesting things going forward after these cases and after the current public discussion that we're having is whether or not we will see some kind of a movement that tries to broker a compromise between these competing positions by doing something like privatizing marriage altogether or kind of having a retreat from this robust public regulation of marriage.
And tell us more about what that would look like.
I'm not quite sure what it would look like right now. You know, you'd have to look forward. Federal law, as we know, uses the word marriage thousands of places, and the status of being married affects your status in the law in all sorts of different ways. But you have this kind of odd question involved in some of these cases. So in Windsor, for example, she inherits a several million-dollar estate, and she's not exempt from the estate tax. She would have had to pay, you know, $300,000+ for this estate tax. And I think one of the logical questions is, well, had they been unmarried but lived together, shared their resources, been dependent on each other in all sorts of different ways, why would she still be subject to the estate tax? Is that fair to treat her in that way different than, say, a married person? And so one of those questions that you'll have, an example of how this might go forward, I think, was provided by the Board of Regents, which just passed a policy to allow domestic partner benefits in the University of Missouri. But if you read the fine print, you don't have to be in a romantic or sexual relationship in order to receive those domestic partner benefits.
Yeah, they don't really call it domestic partner even. It's, I think, financially dependent or something.
And so if we have some question about what is it that we are trying to do with our marriage law currently, are we trying to privilege through financial benefits, people that are economically dependent on each other. If that's the case, then it seems like it's completely irrelevant if you're in a romantic or sexual relationship at all. There's all sorts of people who are economically dependent on each other that may deserve benefits and may benefit from those policies just as much as anyone else.
Interesting. I want to talk a little more about that, but let me remind everyone first that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the effects of the recent Supreme Court ruling that struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act. Joining me in the studio are Justin Dyer, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Missouri, Michelle Cecil, a professor of law at MU, and on the phone and via video, we have A.J. Bockelman, executive director of the organization Promo. For those of you in our audience, we have a few minutes left. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also email us at intersection@kbia.org or tweet us at intersectionkbia. I want to follow up with what you were just saying, because I think this is interesting. From the federal government standpoint, what is the reason of putting marriage into all of these laws? Like, what interest does the government have in whether people are married or not?
Well, Michelle mentioned earlier, she's talking about Social Security and the way that we've structured our Social Security laws. It presumed a pretty traditional understanding of what it meant to be married, and it assumes that, say, one spouse would not be working, would be staying at home. And so you have kind of all sorts of traditional assumptions built into the way that we've structured our marriage laws that publicly we don't really adhere to anymore. And so you have all sorts of just questions about whether or not that makes sense in the way that we've structured it. I think some of the other norms surrounding marriage are a good example of that, where we have norms of permanence and fidelity and monogamy and all sorts of different things associated with marriage, which I think originally presumed that it was a union that was oriented toward procreation and child rearing in a family. I think we've moved far away from that, not in recent years. I think we started moving far away from that probably in the 1960s and long before we ever had a discussion about whether or not justice required recognizing same-sex marriage. But it brings up all sorts of questions, and I don't think that this is going to be the end of the discussion. I think it's probably the beginning of the discussion about what do we want to do with our marriage laws, what point do they serve, why do we have them, and what do we want them to look like.
Right. Help us with a little bit of that context of how it has changed over the years. I mean, you mentioned the 1960s.
Sure.
Here we are 50 years later. What's gone on in those 50 years legally that got us to where we are?
Really interesting. There was a case in 1971 that made it to the Supreme Court. It was called Baker versus Nelson. And it was the first case of two men who wanted to marry, bringing a case in court, federal court, went to the Supreme Court.
In the 1960s?
In the 1970s, 1971. 70, yeah. And you had two college students at the University of Minnesota march down to the county clerk's office, applied for a marriage license. They were denied. They brought their case in Minnesota State Court, went to the Minnesota Supreme Court. The Minnesota Supreme Court said, no, marriage in the state of Minnesota is a union of a man and a woman. Interestingly, the state of Minnesota did not use gendered language in their marriage statutes, and so it didn't specifically say, like we have in Missouri, that marriage is a union of a man and a woman. It did use the terms bride and groom, and the Supreme Court said, well, look, according to – they pull out Black's Law Dictionary and Webster's Dictionary, and they said, look, according to these dictionaries, that's what marriage is. That's what we presume it to be. It makes its way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court declines to hear the case because of a want of a federal question, substantial federal question. What that means is they said, look, nothing about the federal constitution has anything to do with this case. And so that's 1971. Fast forward to Windsor versus U.S., to Hollingsworth versus Perry. A lot has changed in the intervening years. I think nobody could possibly say that there's no substantial federal question now involved. And so the federal courts are involved in this. The short story of how that happened are two provisions in the 14th Amendment. It says that no state shall deprive anybody of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And the question is, what is liberty? How do we understand liberty? And the other is that no state shall deny anybody the equal protection of the laws. And so the other question is, how do we understand equality and equal protection and what that means? And both of those lines of doctrine and precedent have been set by Justice Kennedy. And so Justice Kennedy now is sitting there with lines of precedent that he's developed and deciding how to employ them.
Interesting. And is that – I mean, are those two lines of of reasoning the place that marriage belongs when we're talking about who should be allowed to marry whom?
If we decide that marriage is a fundamental right in terms of the Constitution, then yes. For the court's jurisprudence, when they talk about fundamental rights and states denying somebody fundamental rights, then we often look to the Due Process Clause to talk about those things. And so if we presume that it's a fundamental right, then yes, that's where it is. If we presume that laws that require people to be of different sexes to be married, if we presume that those laws provide an equal protection challenge or equal protection problem, then we're in the same place. We're in the 14th Amendment again.
Right. Michelle, you were nodding there.
I agree with Justin on mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
Interesting. So how would the Supreme Court then uphold the idea that states can restrict marriage? I mean, if this does go, you know, on its trajectory 3 to 5 years from now, some state is, you know, defending its constitution in front of the Supreme Court on this, what's the case they're going to make to say, hey, we can have a constitution that says man plus woman, that's it?
I think the case they're going to make is going to be pitched to Kennedy. Kennedy is the swing vote on these issues, and they're going to try to make a robust federalism case that historically, traditionally, marriage has been a state-level institution, that it's a domestic relationship that's regulated by the state, and therefore the federal government and other states should defer to those state definitions. That becomes the argument. But it's a tricky argument to make, particularly because you have this separate question provided by Kennedy himself of whether or not those types of distinctions in the law are invidious discriminations. Are they just motivated by an irrational animus? And if so, they can't stand. And so that's the question. That's what Scalia in his dissent in Windsor accuses Kennedy of waiting for the state shoe to drop. Later, maybe next term, I think is how he phrased it.
Yeah.
And so just kind of a blatant accusation that, look, you just were unwilling to trace out the logic of your own principles in this case. And maybe for reasons AJ mentioned earlier, because of the political context and a fear of what the political backlash might be circa 2013. If we wait a term or two, it might look differently.
Right. AJ, there was one other question in the chat room. We have about a minute left, but I want to throw this one at you. What about the tangled mess of divorce? Right. So they're fighting, you know, same-sex marriage means that if they're married, they have to actually go through the entire process of divorce should that union dissolve. What's that going to look like at this point in Missouri if a couple goes to, you know, Seattle or to Iowa and gets married and comes back and wants to divorce?
That's a good question. Currently, I believe there have been a couple of cases that have been through the court system. Nothing has gone as far as the Supreme Court in the state to take up a divorce case. I believe that they've declined to hear those cases so far. So because the state does not recognize marriages between same-sex couples so far, we've seen it stated that they will not take up those cases. Now, that could change with these federal pieces. That's yet to be seen.
So does that mean the couple would have to go back to where they were married in order to get divorced and have those federal benefits separated out?
Yes.
Okay.
Currently, yes.
Right. So a lot more plane travel involved for those couples should they go down that path. Unfortunately, we are just about out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and sign us off here. I want to thank our guests for joining us today. Justin Dyer, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Missouri, Michelle Cecil, a professor of law at MU, and A.J. Bockelman, executive director of the organization Promo. We'd like to remind those of you joining us as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon by going online to kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar and Janet Saidi. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Rachel Gangware. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. In for Ryan Femuliner. I'd like to thank you for joining us and have a great week.